I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This episode of Blue Shirts Breakaway is brought to you by you, the fans. That's right. Go to patreon.com/blueshirtsbreakaway today to get access to our PSP OTs, ad-free episodes, our Discord, which is insane, and much, much more. Today's episode, we have Emerson Eatum, former New York Ranger, to talk about his time with the team. Also, his thoughts on the NHL and, you know, some thoughts from the locker room. And also, Greg and I review the Ryan Lindgren injury and much, much more. But if you were in the New York City area this weekend, I will be at T-Squared, hanging out pretty much all day. I think I'm going to drive up from Philly sometime in the morning-ish, early afternoon. It's March Madness, but we're hosting a New York Rangers versus Panthers watch party at 8 o'clock. Doors are at 6:30, but I will be there. I don't know, DM me. Like, see, what time are you going to get here, Ryan? Let's hang out, watch some basketball, and chill and stuff like that. I don't really have plans. I'm just trying to figure out the day. So text me, DM me, whatever you got to do. I'll see some of you there. And let's enjoy the show. Look, these are the good times, right? If these aren't the good times, what is? I think that's the Kurt Vonnegut's uncle line. Anywho, let's get to the show with Gregory and I. Here we go.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Messier, and you're listening to Blue Shirts Breakaway, the number one Rangers podcast.
Break fans, welcome to another week of the Blue Shirts Breakaway. I am your host, Ryan Mead, and I'm here with my co-host, Greg Kaplan, as the Rangers continue to win hockey games. Greg, say hello.
All right, here we go. Baseball season, 10 days away. Let's get into it.
Starting in Seoul, so that matters, I think. Oh, those are official games, I'm pretty sure, but...
They sure are, but they don't count for our fantasy season, which is bullshit as someone that owns Fernando Tatis Jr.
I thought they did. But no, we're not here to talk about fantasy baseball, as is tradition. The Rangers notably had 5 games last week in 7 days, a schedule which would make most of us watch or sleep for a very, very long time. Gregory, they won 4 of 5 of those games, 1 game losing to the Lightning in a game that was probably closer than the final score indicates of 6-3. They then went back-to-back in less than 24 hours, played a wily game against the Pittsburgh Penguins, winning 7-4, and then beating the Islanders, who looked dead the entire time, despite also playing a back-to-back with the Rangers, 5-2. Everything was clicking until, and I mean even after, the moment Ryan Lindgren got hurt, and I think that's probably where we have to start.
Yeah, we could start there, because I think I have a hot take.
I'm prepared for this one, and I don't think I agree with you, but continue.
I just don't think it's a big deal if he's in the lineup or not. I truly don't.
That is scorching hot. I know you know this, but it is scorching hot.
I think we need to have an honest-to-God discussion about how Ryan Lindgren has played this year, which has been underwhelming, to say the least.
We had that discussion a couple months ago where it's like, yeah, this is a really down year for Ryan Lindgren. I think he's been coming a little bit better recently. He's been coming on a little bit better recently. He's been playing better hockey. Phrasing, everybody. Do not quote that.
It does remind me. I am going to compare this immediately. I was watching have you watched any of these spring breakout games for prospects in baseball? We're going to get back to the Rangers in a second. But we're on the topic of come. So I want to be able to talk about this openly.
Okay, great.
Gary Apple, God bless him, the in-studio host for the Mets and SNY, was doing the play-by-play for the Mets spring breakout game because they had a regular game later that night that SNY was going to broadcast, and that's where the number one broadcast team was. I'm pretty sure, 99.999% sure, that Gary Apple simply had a thought slip out of his mind, and he didn't finish the sentence, but he was talking about Jet Williams. And he said, and this is a direct quote, Ryan, Jet Williams, a hot prospect on the come, ended the thought. That's all he said.
It's just like, you know what? That's enough.
He is on the come. And I was like, is this a baseball term that I somehow have evaded for 35 years? Or did my man just like...
like seconds ago. Yeah. Really, really poor timing. Back to Ryan Lindgren, enough about me saying embarrassing things. Look, it's hard for me to analytically argue with you that Ryan Lindgren hasn't been... I think the lineup is going to miss him pretty much no matter what here, Greg. And the reason I say this is this. It's the chemistry that Adam Fox has built with him over the years. Fox has not played with Ruedel. Not that I think Ruedel will get the time. We'll talk about the deep pairings in that situation in just a second. I think there's something special about being able to trust that person like Ryan Lindgren for Adam Fox. Now, look, you're right. Lindgren has not been good this year. Offensively, he's been a disaster. His puck moving skills have not been good. Defensively, he's even been getting exposed in some places, but he is sort of the quote unquote heart and soul of the team in a lot of different ways. And I mostly worry for the chemistry of the other lines. Adam Fox, obviously, like, look, Trouba's going to come back soon, but the Snyder-Miller duo has been awesome. Jones has been killing it, which is a really great sign for this team. But this is just one of those situations where, like, do you move Miller up to play with Fox, like the dream we've always had, and then, or do you keep, you know, Schneider and Miller together and somehow form another different pairing on that top situation with maybe Jones, Fox? That's too small, in my opinion. It's just, I know Ryan Lindgren hasn't been the way he's supposed to be all year long. I do think replacing him, and again, we do not know how long he is out, but the injury looks bad. It will be very, very difficult.
I just don't think it's going to be that difficult. I know what the historical numbers say. I know what the historical precedence is, but that's largely because, one, Ryan Lindgren, for a large part of his career up until the season, has been one of the best defensive defensemen the New York Rangers have ever employed. And two, the player coming into the lineup when Ryan Lindgren has been coming out have been a long line of Jared Tenorti, of Ben Harper, of guys who shouldn't be playing defense in the NHL. Jack Johnson.
How did you get three names deep and not say Lieber Hayek? How dare you?
I've honestly forgotten about Lieber Hayek in a lot of ways. How dare you? Yeah, we're talking about the Rangers sliding in Chad Ruedel, who's been at his absolute worst league average, but he's played better than that in long stretches for the Penguins and has been playing pretty well this year, full stop. The Rangers aren't drawing in guys that shouldn't be in the NHL anymore. They are drawing in legitimate top six capable NHL defensemen. They are dealing with an embarrassment of riches on the blue line. The fact that this is Zach Jones's first sustained run of the year and he's playing this well in this condensed of a schedule is crazy. So I'm sorry if I'm just not worried that this version of Ryan Lindgren, this 2024 Ryan Lindgren, who's going to miss time, how much time is yet to be determined. I'm just not worried about him not being in the lineup because the guys the Rangers are putting in their place are good hockey players. That's just something we haven't had the privilege of talking about in a very, very long time. Usually we've been talking about the good hockey players that aren't playing, that have to sit on the bench because Patrick Nemeth has to draw in. And we just don't have that anymore. Ryan Lindgren has, to call him a net negative offensively is unfair to all the other net negatives we have talked about on this year podcast. He's been atrocious offensively. He's been fine in his own zone. Yeah, I think there have been more errors defensively this year than we've seen from Ryan Lindgren in the past. And that's a part of aging. He plays a very gritty sandpaper style of hockey that we know doesn't age well. We've saw it with Dan Girardi and Mark Stahl in the history of this year podcast. So I just, everyone freaking out that Ryan Lindgren coming out of this lineup, yes, he's a very important player to this team. He's a very important player to this locker room. He's a very important person to Adam Fox. But one, Adam Fox is a special defenseman. I think he can play with anybody. And two, I frankly think the player that's going to draw in for Ryan Lindgren might be better than Ryan Lindgren. And I'm sorry, like, I've never been less concerned about Ryan Lindgren leaving this lineup. I can't bring myself to fake worry about it. I'm not going to do it for the clicks. I'm not going to do it for the listens. I, honest to God, truthfully believe the New York Rangers are going to be more than fine with Ryan Lindgren out of this lineup. If I'm proven wrong, so be it. But I truly believe a combination of Chad Ruedel and Zach Jones are more than enough to make up for Ryan Lindgren.
You have some points there. I'm not sure I fully agree with it. I think on paper, everything you said makes sense. I'm just talking on the chemistry level of what you already addressed, which brings us to how do the lines actually work? So let's say Jacob Trouba comes back, like, I don't know, next week, theoretically. Mm-hmm. So does that give us Miller Fox?
No chance.
Okay, no chance?
No chance. I think Gustafson would either move up to play with Fox or, frankly, Schneider. We just have too much evidence to show that whether we like it or the analytics hate it, we know Peter Laviolette feels safe with Miller Trouba. And he doesn't just feel safe, he feels confident in them as a pair. They get the hard assignments. They play number one number one even strength defensive pair minutes. They are the go-to for Peter Laviolette. And maybe Miller's increased play with Schneider, he's feeling himself. I think he had a marvelous week. I think his play has been trending upwards since the trade deadline, much like Igor Shesterkin. It seemed like he needed a midseason reset, and he got it. I know Trouba has struggled at times. I don't know if it was because he was trying to play through injury. I don't know if simply wear and tear grinds him down. But if you get beginning of the season Trouba with this version of Keandre Miller, that should be your number one pair, especially if Lindgren's out of the lineup. And then it should be the pair the Rangers lean on because, frankly, Adam Fox is too important on the power play and to creating offense where the fewer defensive assignments I can give Adam Fox where they're truly taxing, the better for the New York Rangers.
So correct me if I'm wrong here. Ruedel's a right-handed defenseman? I don't remember.
He's a righty shot, but I think he plays both sides because this is the National Hockey League and truly talented defensemen should be able to play both sides.
Okay, fair. I'm just going through the defensive pairs in my head, and like even if you do get Miller Fox, it's still kind of awkward. It's like Jones Trouba.
If memory serves correct, when Lindgren missed a couple games early in the season, it was Gustafson who slid up.
That is correct.
And Schneider Jones was the bottom pair. So my guess is first crack will be Fox Gustafson.
And then Ruedel will still be, you think, the extra skater at this point.
When Trouba's back, yeah, I think so. At least I think it's Jones's. If there's a defenseman injured, I think right now Jones has earned the leash. It's his job to lose.
And then that'll bring us back to Jones Schneider, which we've seen, and they have some chemistry. It can be exposed, but I think both of them are playing the best NHL hockey they've ever played right now. So there's no better time to get them together than right this moment.
Yeah, and I think it's been exposed a large part because they're both young defensemen, and clearly takes Schneider, or at least it used to take Schneider a couple games to get adjusted to a new partner, and it clearly took Jones a couple games to get adjusted to simply being back in the lineup. And you put those two players together where suddenly you have one defensive pair trying to adjust simultaneously to themselves and each other, and it created issues. But right now, they're playing great. Like, frankly, if you wanted me to say Trouba's back in the lineup, but Lindgren's not for game one of the playoffs, what would I want my pairs to be? I would want Schneider, Fox, Miller, Trouba, Jones, Gustafson. I wouldn't think twice about it.
Schneider on the top line is interesting. It's interesting. I just don't know like if they would play him on his offhand.
I know
it seems so stupid, but I just don't know if they would do that.
I have doubts. But if you're trying to match likeness for likeness in terms of, you know, half offense, half 200-foot hockey defense, Schneider is the new Lindgren in terms of, well, he's even better because he can add something offensively, but you feel good if Schneider has to play your more safer defensive role to allow Adam Fox to do the things that makes Adam Fox special. But at the same time, I would feel perfectly fine if any of the four of Ruedel, Jones, Schneider, and Gustafson played with Fox for game one of the playoffs. I'd feel perfectly fine about it, which again is why I can't bring myself to fake fear about Ryan Lindgren not being in the lineup. This isn't the year for us to be having the true, oh God, what will the Rangers do without Lindgren conversation. They've never been more prepared, and he's never been worse. So it's... It's both those things simultaneously. I just don't know why a lot of people freaking out about Lindgren, and I just can't fake it. I can't get there. I think I've never felt this team could not possibly be more fine. This is like back when Steven Matz was the Mets' fourth or fifth starter. Oh no, he got hurt. Ugh, whatever will we do? Oh no, no Steven Matz. Ah, shucks. That's kind of where I am with Ryan Lindgren.
I think if you had to pick out of a hat, like which main core player to be injured would be the least devastating, it's probably Ryan Lindgren for the depth reasons you noted at this point in time. But look, credit to Chris Drury. A couple weeks ago, you and I were like, I don't understand why they would even try and trade for a defenseman. The Ruedel for a fourth is really a very shrewd move now looking back. So credit to him.
Yeah, hindsight's 20/20. I mean, but the other thing is, you know, I honestly would have felt fine if Connor Mackey had to come up. As long as the Rangers didn't have two defensive injuries, I would have been fine with the depth that the Rangers had down in Hartford. We just suddenly now have two injuries. So, again, it's even more of a boon for Chris Drury, which, again, makes me think that he knew Drury was playing through something for a while. The fact that he prioritized adding a defenseman.
And the fact that they announced it out of nowhere secretly after.
Yeah, he went from day to day to 2 to 3 weeks in a span of 24 hours. And the only reason he went from day to day to 2 to 3 weeks is because they traded for Chad Ruedel. That is all that changed.
I 100% agree. Hey, I want to talk about the last week just for, not that I'm saying like, look, this Ranger team is good. Obviously it is. They won 4 out of 5, but is there anything in particular that just sort of stood out to you? I mean, obviously they lose to the Lightning. I think that game was 50-50 at many, many points. And they were exhausted during that, but beating the Hurricanes 1-0 since we last talked. We obviously talked after they beat the Devils last week on this podcast, but even the weekend games when it was wide open versus the Penguins and then just domination versus the Islanders, there's a chance they become the number one seed in the league. The Panthers game this upcoming Saturday. If you want to watch it with me at T-Squared, you can at Grand Central this Saturday. But it's very, very important. They're also playing the Bruins. It's this week, this upcoming week versus the Jets, Bruins, and Panthers will really decide if they're going to play the second wild card or the first wild card. And that, I think that's more of a storyline than I really want to admit.
I mean, I don't know. I just don't know how to square the circle with what the Rangers are doing in terms of a playoff team, because if you're a glass half full guy, we're talking about how the Rangers are within a point, 2 points, 3 points of the President's Trophy or being the number one overall seed in the East. And if you're a glass half empty guy, you're talking about how the Rangers only have a 2-game advantage above the Hurricanes and that the Rangers could easily slip out of the division lead. I don't know. I like, you know, it's the uncomfortable conversation of so many people are started asking us, well, who would you rather have in the playoffs? Yeah, I'd rather play the Flyers, but I also it doesn't benefit you to tank to then get the better matchup. Ideally, I want the Rangers playing well when the playoffs start. Whoever the opponent is almost insignificant. As long as I feel like the Rangers are playing good, clean hockey, I think this team is one of the two or three best teams in the Eastern Conference, so the opponent should not matter. But yeah, if I was grading on a curve, obviously the Flyers would be the team that I would love to devour in a nice, easy 5-game series in round one. And I think by me saying 5, I'm doing my best to be generous. Like, that's ideal. But I also, like, it doesn't benefit the Rangers to suddenly just be like, oh no, I fell over. Oh no, I fell over again, and lose games that they otherwise should be winning. It's more important for the Rangers to beat the Jets, beat the Bruins, beat the Panthers individually. I'm not saying they have to win all three, but it's more important for the Rangers to play hard, good hockey games against three of the best teams in the NHL right now than it is for the Rangers to conveniently lose points, to fall into a position where they don't have to play the Lightning anymore and they could possibly play whichever team just doesn't actually want to be in the playoffs. Because it's like the Flyers or the Capitals right now are the two prime contenders, and I guess the Islanders are the three prime contenders for the number three spot in the Metro. And the Flyers don't want to be there. The Islanders can't figure out how to be there. And the Capitals just couldn't care less if they are there. So, yeah, I'd rather play one of those three teams. But I just don't see how, like, you're not going to intentionally lose. That's not beneficial to anybody.
I can't believe the Capitals are literally a point out of the playoff picture. It makes no sense. I don't understand. There is so much going wrong with that team. And if they go on a little win streak to the end of the season here, they have a shot. And look, if Pittsburgh does too, they can do it. I can't believe it, but they can.
They look fucking dead.
Nobody wants the second wildcard spot. Nobody.
Nobody. Second wildcard spot. No one wants to finish third in the fucking Metro. Like, nobody in the Metro wants. There are two teams in the Metro who give a shit, and everyone else is like, maybe not this year. Can we just roll this over? Like, just take me out. I'm good.
Somehow the Capitals have played five more games than the Flyers. That feels wrong, but here we are.
Schedule making, it's a beautiful thing. You started this segment off asking me what good things there are right now that we saw from the last five games. Ryan, I'm going to become obnoxious with how much I slob the knob of the third line.
It's amazing.
And I want to be clear. It's whoever the third line to me is Wennberg, Kako, and whoever the fuck else decides to play with Wennberg or Kako. For most of the week, it was Cooley, and he had a phenomenal week. But at the end of the week, it was Brodzinski. And you know who had a great week?
And it was also Feezy, by the way. Yeah, it's Feezy, too.
Whoever you put right now with Wennberg or Kako, it's just sex on ice. That's all it is. It's electric. It's magnificent. It's all we've said for the last couple weeks about how you would love it, I would love it, everyone would love it if Kapo Kako was the bar none, clear-cut, number one right winger on this New York Rangers hockey team. But you ignore the significant on-ice advantage you get when Kapo Kako is out there playing against other teams' bottom six forwards. Those lines, I don't know what the exact, you know, XG is when they are on the ice. It feels like they have 91% possession, though. Every time that third line is on the ice, it just feels like the puck is trapped in the Rangers' offensive zone. And it's Kako's getting more confident as the games go by. He scored a goal over the weekend. He's driving to the net more. He's not afraid to possess the puck as long as humanly possible. Wennberg's speed is adding something to that line that, frankly, was not there. I will chalk up to that. I didn't think Wennberg was necessarily a must-get at the trade deadline. I thought Johnny Brodzinski would be fine, but it's clearly having the fact that you can have Wennberg and Brodzinski or Wennberg and Cooley. I would ideally give me Cooley, Wennberg, Kako all day long. I'm going to eat it up. I'm going to fucking love it. It's been great. That third line is such an advantage for the Rangers. And it usually comes at a time, Ryan, with either Fox or Gustafson on the ice. So you have a defenseman that is also thinking offensively whenever they're there. And now you have Zach Jones, not afraid to skate down from the red line, blue line either, down to the red line. I think looking back on it, I have always been a third line guy. When we started this podcast, it was on the back of Benoit Pouliot and that Derek Brassard third line that the Rangers had. And I think I naturally love and respond to a good, hardworking, high octane third line. And this might be the best version we've had since we started this podcast.
I think it might be the best version is just so funny to say. It's just Wennberg Kako plus, like, and that's whatever their role is. They've been coached into the position that this is what you're supposed to be doing, and they've been doing it at such a high level. It is absolutely ridiculous to watch some of the shifts where Kako and Wennberg are just cycling while the other team tries their hardest to get the puck from them, and they create three or four chances, and then somehow all of a sudden Kapo Kako has found the ability that I thought he'd have for his entire career, which is to snipe on one knee in front of the net with two goals over the last couple games, and he's been producing a lot more than that. This is the Kako I've always sort of dreamed of watching. I know he's gotten hot like this in the past. I get that. And then it's always gone into a lull of a couple games without a point. This time feels a little different. And I know I've had this rant before. I get it. But Kako has had some unfortunate injuries during that time, whether it be his wrist or otherwise. Whenever Kako has gotten going, something has gone wrong. And while Wennberg, I didn't expect him to be this. I love him. He's been so good since he's been here. And while I think Kako would still be effective on the top line, you know, Roslovic has really sort of activated Mika Zibanejad in some weird ways, whether it be his speed or the playmaking around Mika Zibanejad or the fact that it's just March. It seems like that top line and some of the power play is starting to get going at a time it's desperately needed.
I don't know if it's Roslovic necessarily. Roslovic's been great. I don't want to take anything away from him. Frankly, all of the deadline additions, we'll see how Ruedel does when he slides into the lineup, but it's impossible to complain about Wennberg or Roslovic. We should see how Patan is doing. And I think Hartford is actually struggling right now. So sadly, my depth might not be depthing as much as I wanted them to, but that's neither here nor there. I don't know if it's Roslovic that's gotten Mika going, or if it was just, you know, Chris Drury walking in the locker room one day, looking Mika dead in the eyes and telling him, I don't know if you thought a white knight was going to come through this door that was going to carry up your game, but the only man in this room that can carry your jock is yourself, so go fucking do it. Because that Chris Drury, by trading for Jack Roslovic, essentially bet on Mika Zibanejad to turn Mika Zibanejad around. And I don't know, again, it's the time of the year where Mika usually gets hot, whether it's Roslovic doing something that we're not seeing in the underlying metrics, or if it's simply Drury, Laviolette, and everybody challenged Mika Zibanejad to go be better. Just go do the thing. But it's trending upward. You know, the power play, it looked a lot better over the weekend. It started scoring goals over the weekend. Obviously, everything looks good when points are going up on the board. But it's been a steady increase for Zibanejad, where if you go back, I think it was the Blues game on last Saturday, when he had like 7 shots on goal. Yeah. I know. I mean, they've played 12 games since then, so it is what it is. But yeah, ever since he had 7 shots on goal, you can tell every night Zibanejad seems like he's playing with more confidence, and it seems like he's turning a corner. And again, we said this with Vince, and I think Vince said this himself, and everybody we've talked to have said this throughout the years. It didn't matter really who the Rangers added at the trade deadline. They needed to add guys to add the depth, but the Rangers were going to go as far as the Igors, the Mikas, the Kreiders, the Panarins, as far as their stars take them, is as far as the Rangers will go. And if Mika Zibanejad needed a kick in the ass in order to get back to this point, I'm happy he got it. But yeah, it's a week in which you said it off the top. They played 5 games in 7 days. They went 4-1. You make a really good argument that they should have gone 5-0. It's really hard to leave that 5-game stretch and be anything but just overly and annoyingly positive.
Yeah, the last annoyingly overly positive point I want to end on, because I just feel like to glaze past this is a terrible idea. Artemi Panarin had a 5-point game on Saturday, and he is not only still being the caring, loving person he always is. To get a couple good quotes of, we have a lot of good guys and a lot of good players, and this is all we need to keep winning. And I think he's pretty serious about keeping that mental mindset towards the playoffs. But I think if any other player had a 5-point game, you and I would be doing cartwheels, chatting about it. And I just feel like Panarin makes it so normalized. And yet, somehow, 2024 is his career season for the Rangers, and he's not even going to sniff the hard conversation.
But maybe he shouldn't, and that's okay. Like, there's only one league MVP. Yep. I think Artemi Panarin should be the Rangers representative in the conversation for sure. But, we can do this every year with Connor McDavid. He's the best player in the league. Sometimes you should just give the award to the best player. And if you don't want to do that, the Avalanche have done a lot of weird shit this year, but Nathan MacKinnon has been there every fucking night, putting points in the net every fucking night. Artemi Panarin is
the favorite to win, I think, still right now.
I mean, he should be. He's having a phenomenal year. Like, it's not a knock on Artemi Panarin to say he's not the best player in hockey. Most important, Ranger. That's for sure. He's firmly, Ryan, in the DeGrom zone, where, like, I expect 6 innings and 12 strikeouts and no runs.
He's been unbelievable. And to be fair, like, a lot of people have said this to us over the past couple of years. Panarin hasn't showed up in the playoffs.
He hasn't. He did have he's got a Game 7 winner you can't take away from him.
But everything else, you guys are right. But if this Panarin, this version we've seen all year, shows up in a couple of these rounds, we're in good hands. But he knows. He's not a dummy. He's very aware that he needs to play this level at the playoff level. I think that's it. Want to go to our interview?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
We have our good friend Emerson Eatsum, former New York Ranger of the original 96. And we will get to him after a word from our sponsors. Transition. Hey, yo, I'm here to tell you about our official ticket sponsor of this podcast all season long. That's right. You guess it. It is TickPick, the number one ticketing app to all Ranger games and all other events, if you'd like. I actually had someone
I think it was Ava who posted on Twitter this week. She was like, hey, who's used Ticket before? I responded immediately. That's right. I said, use promo code BLUESHIRTS15 to get $15 off any order over $99. It works for any account, and it's so easy on the TickPick app. All you got to do is download the app itself. It's super easy to track prices, to go by alphabetical order, see the best deals, see when stock has increased, see when stock has decreased. I literally use TickPick for all of my ticketing needs. Upcoming baseball games, WrestleMania I'm going to in a couple weeks because of TickPick, whole thing. So use TickPick, use promo code BLUESHIRTS15 at checkout to get $15 off any order over $99, and we will see you at some of the games.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, we're back with our first guest today. We have Emerson Eatum. He is the color analyst for the Anaheim Ducks on the Duck Stream. Emerson, thanks for joining us.
No, thanks for having me. I look forward to this.
Look, I did some research on your NHL career before you came on. One of the sickest goals you've ever scored was on Jacob Trouba. What was that like?
Yeah, it's one that's just when my name gets brought up or on Instagram, sometimes on the popular page, they'll have some account will do maybe the best playoff goal scored of all time. So it seems like I get a reminder at least once a year with something like that, you know, happening. And yeah, I'm feel blessed to have had an opportunity to play in the National Hockey League first and foremost. You know, a lot of guys have had longer careers than I did, but there's quite a few that don't even get a taste to play in one National Hockey League game, let alone I think I got 170 something. So had some good playoff success as well, as you mentioned on that goal in playoffs. We played great as a team that series. That was a big goal came at a crucial time. And yeah, I don't, you know, Trouba has gone on to make a lot more money than I have.
Yeah. And, yeah, we know.
he's captaining a fantastic organization, just definitely at the top of the food chain when it comes to history, being original six team. And I mean, you know, quite the program overall. So yeah, I was just fortunate to get an opportunity in playoffs to, in that particular play, just create some time and space for myself. It's funny. I look back on that goal and I did, I think, things that now I see more of from a skills perspective that weren't really going through my thought process at the time. If you notice, I took that puck off the wall and took a step towards at least center ice before going back to the outside. And each play that happened or, you know, each weight transfer that happened, it seemed to, you know, me going off the wall, take Jacob Trouba's gap towards the middle of the ice. And then, you know, when I brought that puck back before toe dragging it, you know, I got him thinking that I'm going to try to beat him on the outside. And it's just funny how now just me being a broadcaster and my years after that, play in particular, working with guys like Adam Oates and Daryl Belfry and just seeing kind of what I didn't know in real time and looking back on it, what I know now and just, you know, the skill and habits that all led up to that goal, I find it kind of fascinating.
Well, I feel like that's a perfect transition, Emerson, to talk about just this time of year on the calendar. Obviously, you have playoff experience, something Ryan and I will never have in our entire lives. We get enough stress just simply watching a playoff game, let alone playing in it. What's this final push to the playoffs like for a player in the middle of a race that is trying to not just help his team get to the playoffs, but establish themselves as a player to be relied on once you get to the playoffs?
Yeah, and that's a great question. This is all about, you would assume if you're just a playoff team, say one through four as far as where you're projected to land in either the Western Conference or the the Eastern Conference. I mean, those, the 1-4s are, you know, they've been established for the most part all year, right? So now you're just trying to fine tune, you know, just the details, the systems, you know, really fine tuning the game within the game. Like the game within the game is so crucial when it comes to playoff times. And when I say the game within the game, you know, making sure that each and every clear out of the defensive zone is out, and making sure you're not turning pucks over in that sense. Being able to realize, you know, how much gap, time and space, whether it's 5 foot or 10 feet. Hey, you know, do I have enough time to make that next positive play, or do I got to get this thing in a corner and you know, start executing the forecheck? So I just think, you know, dialing in the turnovers or trying to, you know, prevent turnovers and, you know, not going off sides, not too many men penalties. I mean, these are all things, the game within the game, that, you know, add up during playoff time. And you just can't afford things like that, right? Like you can't afford going off sides, the controllables. You can't afford too many men on the ice calls, the hooking, the holdings in the offensive zone. I mean, those are the kind of areas where you're really trying to clean up right now, especially if you're projected to be, you know, going past the first couple rounds into the conference finals, right? I mean, if you're already, you know, one of those teams that are in that conversation, I mean, that probably started after Christmas time, right? And then you got to assume that if you're in the wild card hunt or, you know, you're one of the seventh, eighth teams making in the playoffs. You know, I mean, that's probably, once again, has been dialed in since after Christmas time. And really, you know, trying to get that game fine tuned leading into the first round.
There's so many ways we can go from everything you just said, Emerson, but the way I want to go is, you were the only 96 in New York Rangers history. Then Jack Roslovic becomes the second. The Rangers made acquisitions at the deadline. They were going to probably try and get Frank Vatrano. But before we talk about Vatrano, what's it like as a player to adjust to the new players that just came in? You've been with the same guys for, you know, 5-6 months playing the same game all the time. Obviously, there's injuries and you can play with different players at that time. But these players brought in are brought in for a reason. What's the adjustment period like as a player?
Yeah, that's a great question. I can only go based off of my experience, and I'm just trying to think back on some deadline deals that we acquired. I mean, I remember James Wisniewski was a guy that comes to mind of being a seasoned veteran, and yeah, we were just looking to add a player of James's caliber that just brought that perfect mix of experience. You could toss him, of course, on the power play, and just that perfect mix of skill and veteran leadership. So he's definitely a guy that comes to mind that we acquired late, and I feel helped us. You know, was it? You know, we didn't win the cup, so you know, maybe, you know, a guy like that. You know, it's funny that the expectations of a lot of these deals, like I can only imagine Adam Henrique, for instance, going to Edmonton in that market, right? I mean, he's such a solid guy. And he's really the perfect guy to fit in there in a sense that he's a guy that really fills the voids that any team is lacking, whether it's in the faceoff circle, that strong north-south game. But you want to just talk about a guy who can just score in the right areas, the playoff areas, the 15 square feet around that blue paint. That's just, I don't know. Only so many guys have that perfect mix. We just played Winnipeg last night, and Kyle Connor's a guy who not only has that outside speed, who can make things happen out of the corner, but he had a nice deflection. And it's just that ability for teams. And you know, I just mentioned the game within the game, and I know I'm veering off a little bit, but the game within the game, but also the differentiation in scoring. You know, are you able to, you know, quickly go low to high and your D find that quick seam of the net for a deflection, like, you know, Connor's goal last night? So yeah, there weren't huge deadline acquisitions. If you look back on our Ducks teams when I was playing, I mean, we were kind of already stacked heading into playoffs. We had, you know, Solanis, who just the ageless wonder, who just seemed to be able to continue to, at his age, just score big goals and make big plays. And we had Quavu, and we had, of course, Corey Perry, Getzlaf. So we were already seasoned. We had a team that played together lots, and I don't feel like, and nor did Bob Murray at the time, feel the need to go out and acquire, you know, major assets. So we were so close. I mean, the, you know, my window with the Ducks, the furthest we made it was the Western Conference Finals, getting beat out by Chicago Blackhawks, who of course ended up taking it all that year. We were just so close to winning it all, but hey, who knows, maybe another acquisition could have put us over the top. Who knows? You never know. It's so hard to win the hardest trophy to win in sports, the Stanley Cup. It truly is. There's so many different dynamics, just with the game itself, the speed, the injuries. There's so many dynamics to the game of hockey, and you know why it's just really.
Dude, the schedule is brutal. Like yeah, every other yeah. night and, is so much.
Yeah, it's there's so many factors coming into play in order to win the Stanley Cup. We're so close. And yeah, but James Wisniewski is definitely a name that comes to mind as far as acquisitions. He was a funny guy too. He was great off the ice, and it was good to get a guy that meshed well with the guys during that time.
Obviously, Emerson, we're two guys that look almost solely at what the Rangers are trying to do at the deadline, what the Rangers want to do at the deadline, but you're in the thick of it with a team that is clearly young and trying to be on the rise, and had assets that were clearly valuable to teams trying to make a push for the playoffs this year. But what is that like from the locker room perspective to be a young player on a selling team? How do you balance the emotions of, we think we are good and getting better, but this locker room is about to undergo some significant changes?
Yeah, it's somewhat of a promising thought, but it also can be a scary thought too. Because if you look at, I'm going to reference the Edmonton Oilers again. I mean, you know, Taylor Hall. I mean, he wasn't part of the franchise that we see now, right? If you look at Neil Yakupov, well, that one, you know, of course, didn't work out, even though he had a pretty solid first year. So if you look at their first overall picks. Of course, you know, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is a guy that's still in the mix and, you know, playing well. But just when it comes to Taylor Hall, Neil Yakupov, those two guys, right? I mean, they're not currently in the mix right there and the driving forces of that organization. So, you know, although high picks are nice, sometimes they don't work out. And that's kind of the scary part. I think, you know, Anaheim as an organization, I think everyone – of course, like to have this turnaround a little bit quicker. I think if you saw at the start, we exceeded expectations for sure out of the gate. I mean, we took down, you know, Boston in Boston, you know, first month in our first East Coast road trip. We took down just some highly talented teams. I mean, I think Philly was pretty decent early on. I think midway through the year, they really started to pick their game up. But, you know, I don't think anyone was still expecting us to beat Philly and a lot of the teams there early on. So I think it helped. I think it gave guys some momentum, some confidence there early on. But I hate making excuses. We're one of the most injured teams. I think we're top five in man games lost. So that doesn't help, and I know excuses, you don't want to toss them out, but when you're a team trying to really turn things around from a development standpoint, you know, we have young prospects that are just absolute studs, you know, you want everything going right, and you don't want to lose guys that are necessary in order for, you know, the Ducks to come out and win hockey games. So Adam Henrique was a big loss, you know, especially in the faceoff circle, among other things. It's goal scoring's been hard to come by. Not early on, we seem to come back at times and score necessary amounts, maybe a little bit earlier on in the season. But boy, this road trip's been tough. You know, we lose 7-2 to Chicago to start it off. We get shut out by Minnesota 2-0, so that's 9 goals against. And then we just dropped a 6-0 game to Winnipeg. So It's 2 goals for, 15 against this road trip. It hasn't been easy. But, you know, guys are just right now, and Troy Terry just mentioned on his interview that I had prior to last night's game, is just, it's a what do we have to lose mentality. And I somewhat agree with it. Not that you always want to frame things that way, but it rings true. It's like, you know, there's a huge opportunity for guys to come in and just create momentum for themselves in preparation for a huge start at next season.
Which kind of brings us to Frank Vetrano. Was a big trade deadline target for, I think, a bunch of different teams. Didn't end up getting moved. Is maybe one of the reasons he didn't end up getting moved to a lot of what you said. Like, they're still trying to win games. He might be really good for the locker room. He's good to, you know, tutor and be an NHL veteran. And he is scoring goals. I think the Rangers maybe didn't want to pay up for Frank Vetrano, despite loving him in the past. And obviously trading him for him 2 years ago. What do you know about why Frank was kept by the Ducks?
Well, he wants to be here, right? Like, he wants to be, just mentioned on the Empty Netters podcast that, you know, he loves it here. He loves just Orange County. He has a lot of close friends on the team, Ryan Strome being one of them. So he just absolutely loves the organization. He loves the lifestyle. Yeah, he's an East Coast guy, but, you know, he's a very Cali guy at heart, it seems like. And so he loves the area. He loves the situation for his family. And I think that's step number one. But, you know, we're playing a man-on-man system right now, and you need a guy like Frank Vetrano who has that motor, right, who doesn't get fatigued in the defensive zone, who's always constantly has the wheels to stay with his guy and then have that, you know, enough energy to be quick on transition. I feel like he's one of our best, if not the best. And we could talk about, you know, Leo Carlson. I mean, Leo Carlson is just so great off the rush. So, you know, Leo's a guy that comes to mind that can really get it done on transition as well. But, you know, just Frank's a guy who I watch him shift in and shift out. He moves his feet in the defensive zone. Great stick on puck. And he's a guy that likes to go in the fire, right? Like, he's perfect for the man-on-man system because he's just always there. He has that speed to be glued to his guy. And he's got that speed to, you know, be quick on transition. And that's what you need. You just need that perfect balance of that proactiveness that's going to get you prepared to, you know, when you don't quite have that separation. Because, right, when man-on-man, it's not zone, you have that solid 5-10 feet of gap. If you're a winger up to your point, you get that puck, you have that separation already, right? Well, man-on-man, you're getting that puck with the odds of someone, the opposition being closer to you, they're going to be close. So you just got to almost have a sense of quicker reaction time to be prepared for that rush. But I always see him just high delaying, mid delaying, off entry. And, you know, just the best in the world are able to do that, right? Best in the world are able to extend that possession. And he's great. He's got that one-time bomb on the flank on the power play. And he's just a guy who, yeah, we get the goal scoring. He's just a pure goal scorer, which, as I mentioned, right now in Anaheim, it's goals are hard to come by. So you certainly need a guy like him. But, I mean, he can score in many different ways. And he's so valuable when it comes to that.
You mentioned it's been a hard year putting pucks in the back of the net for the Ducks. A big reason for that is simply a guy like Trevor Zegras hasn't been in the lineup. It's a name we have to bring up because obviously he's a New York kid, grew up a Ranger fan, and Ranger fans, he's been tagged in more Ranger trade rumors than I think any player currently in the NHL, not post Jack Eichel, let's say. But is this a situation where he just hasn't been able to be healthy this year, so people are throwing his name around because it's easy to do? Or do you think there's a crossroads in the future with the Ducks and Zegras moving forward?
Well, I think he's always going to be a name that gets tossed around because who wouldn't want Trevor Zegras? You know, he's a guy who puts people in the seats. He's got that celebrity kind of wow factor that you know, I think it's important. I think from a business perspective, look, that's hard to come by these days. Hockey is a game in which, as far as sticking out, yeah, there's some guys that, you know, can bring it style-wise off the ice. But to have this kind of teen heartthrob sensation everywhere he goes. I mean, look, I've seen just a ton more of those plum jerseys out around Orange County and really Southern California. You know, the Bauer ads, the mix of
was it his shoe that sold out super quick this weekend or last weekend?
I wouldn't be shocked. I haven't seen. I just scrolling through Instagram. I saw him in a new Bauer ad. Not that he hasn't been in a Bauer ad before, but you know, it's just it's another way to grow the game for a market like, you know, Southern California, where you need those guys. You need those guys that are going to, you know, bring fans in the seats. And that's not even hockey related. I think he's got all the talent in the world. And it's unfortunate because when he came back from his first injury, you know, he was playing his best hockey. Yeah, he was slow out of the gate. I think a lot of that had to do with just new system going from zone to man on man and just the learning curves, different coaches. Like, I think just a lot of it had to do with that. But I tell you what, he really used that time for the first stint he was out. He used it as advantage, being a student of the game, at the games, really taking in the systems, you know, how he would come out post-injury and be even better. He was attacking more. He was grabbing that puck and had that confidence that maybe he didn't really see, or maybe the Zegras that we saw last year, you know, we saw it again, and unfortunately he gets hurt again. It's just tough. You're at the National Hockey League. You're playing at the top level in the world, right? And it's so hard to create momentum for yourself. It's easy when you're rolling, and well, it's never easy, but you know, it's easier when you're, you know, game in, game out, you're rolling. You have a bad shift, bad game, you know, you got one the next night, right? But when you're out for a substantial amount of time, it's asking a lot for any player, whether they're at the high end of the spectrum in the National Hockey League, or, you know, your league minimum guy. It's just tough. It's tough to get right back in because everyone's buzzing.
As I said earlier, or Greg rather mentioned, we mostly focus on the Rangers here, and we record every Monday for the last 9 years, Emerson. And I think we've been criminally underrating this Rempe story. And I'm not sure how much you followed it, but we didn't realize how big it's gotten. It's become a national story. And obviously he was recently suspended for 4 games. What's it like? Like, how much does it actually matter to have somebody on the ice that is sort of that toughness factor? I don't think Rempe's a goon. I wouldn't call him that. He's giant. He fought three times in this first 4 games. He clearly like wants to bring toughness to the team, but it seems to have also, I guess, energized the team in some way. What was your feeling about having a guy like that on your squads when you were playing in the league?
Well, first off, I'm going to give him props in one area, and then I'm going to knock just one instance in another. So, props to him for just coming. It's almost like a Linsanity situation. In another, I mean, Linsanity was, you know, putting up huge, of course, points there, just broke out of nowhere. And Rempe is just a guy that has that size and that intimidation factor. So he's kind of breaking out and earning his spotlight. And in another category, just his sheer size. And I like his game. He just knows what he has to do night in and night out. And that's great to see, right? It's great to see a consistent game plan from any player. But, you know, he moves his feet. Each and every hit, it's just it's a hit with such intensity because, I mean, look at just the power. He's got speed, too. I mean, when he gets those feet cranking, I mean, he's going into each and every check just with some serious speed. That's scary for a guy, you know, going at you at that size. You know, I don't, you know, maybe a comparable is Reeves, but I don't think maybe even Reeves has, you know, that ability to skate. I think he's even Reeves for his size, his being for the most part, a straight up enforcer. I mean, he can wheel as well. So just good on Rempe for, you know, knowing his game, knowing his ability just within the confines and him just trying to maximize his game as he can. I just don't like the hit on against New Jersey there, him getting
terrible hit. Awful.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, I'm just speaking for players, right? I'm just speaking for anyone who wants to maximize their career, right? And it's just a dangerous elbow. When you have time and think And I know it's happening fast, but I think a play like that's still premeditated, right? Like you're thinking about getting your elbow up like that. I just, you know, so many guys have, you know, even speaking of myself, I had a knee injury. Rafi Torres took out my knee, and I think that one could have been avoided. I think this one for sure could have been avoided. And that is solely not taking anything away from anything else he's done. The kickers, I wanted to give him props. I guess I give him props a lot there. I wanted to knock him for that hit, the high elbow there. But I'm also going to praise him again. And I love McDermott. Like McDermott, I got a chance to play with him a tad bit. I was signed to a PTO there with Los Angeles. So I in training camp, he was just unbelievable. Like, what a guy. And there's not a whole lot of guys. I mean, you hear talk negatively about McDermott, but you know, Rippey doesn't have to fight anyone. You know, he just look. I thought that was a okay read by him. I just I can go on and on, I guess. But bottom line, no one has to fight anyone. So I give him props when maybe he was getting more knocks for, you know, denying McDermott. I saw missing curfew, kind of give him a knock for not going. And I mean, just he doesn't have to fight anyone. You know, that once again starts to get into that category of putting his health and safety at risk, never mind where you're at in the game. You got to manage emotions, you got to manage energy levels between both teams, and he's always, I think, at the focal point on determining whether it's, you know, a good time to fight and not. And the fact that he didn't, I think it gives other guys the reassurance too that, hey, he's not going to go, you know, anytime I ask too. So I think it puts him at a safer point health-wise moving forward.
Emerson, I think this is a fun note for us to wrap on. It's something we had mentioned to you before you jumped on with us. It seems like the player empowerment era in all sports has transitioned from guys trying to dictate where they want to play, who they want to play with, to now being more active and having a more active voice in the media space. Obviously, player podcasts are popular across sports. I mean, you look no further than Draymond. I know Jalen Brunson and Josh Hart just launched their own podcast, but it's fun to see guys, you know, Ryan and I, we're both in our mid 30s now, guys we grew up with around our age that are getting out there more, either on TV or in media spaces, and interacting with the game in different ways. Obviously, you with the Ducks, Brian Boyle is doing more things with the Rangers. It's been great watching Henrik Lundqvist, Steve Valiquette, Anson Carter on the TNT shows. Are you seeing a noticeable transition of players that you considered peers during your playing career being able to kind of become the next generation of the hockey media to a certain extent?
Well, first and foremost, Brian Boyle is an absolute beauty. And he's a guy that, of course, everyone talks so highly about, right? You know, I don't know who isn't a fan of Brian Boyle. So it's just good to see, right? It's the access of, you know, content for up and coming, you know, whether it's players in youth sports, being able to at all hours of the day just, you know, put something new on. And for me, everything's all about repetition. It's all about, food for thought or, you know, nutrients for the brain, if you will. And, you know, the fact that at most of the time free, little to no charging, you know, you're provided with access that probably, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, you'd have to pay a sizable amount to get that content, right? And I think it gives, you know, just going back to the youth players in any sport, this kind of access is it gives them the freedom to better make choices for their own right, right? Maybe they tuned into a podcast that, oh, this is not how I want to kind of go about my career if I, you know, start really climbing up the food chain here, and vice versa, okay? You know, for instance, Brian Boyle's a great guy to, you know, model. I mean, was he the most skilled guy? No, but he was in the league for a long time and certainly a great role model that, hey, he was going about his business this way. Okay, I'm going to mix and match you know, his lifestyle to, I don't know, you know, Zegras, for instance, right? So I think it gives so much info to, in particular, the youth out there to really mold themselves into the just greatest potential they can possibly be.
Emerson, cannot thank you enough for giving us the time this weekend. Anything you want to plug other than Duckstream that before we get out of here?
No, you can just follow me on Instagram at, it's just my name, at Emerson Eatum. And I very grateful that the Ducks have given me an opportunity to just stay local. I'm in Long Beach right now. It's a solid 20 minutes tops to get to Honda Center. It's about 30 minutes to get to Great Park Ice. And things are just, they're great right now. Of course, we want to be winning. But that time will come, because I tell you what, this, you know, Leo Carlson, Mason McTavish, you know, we haven't even discussed Pavel Mentikov or Olin Zellweger. I mean, just the future is really bright for Anaheim. And I'm just so fortunate to be a part of it. And I'm fortunate to be a part of this podcast today. So I really appreciate you guys having me on.
The Ducks will be a monster team in 2-3 years. It'll definitely be a problem. Thank you, Emerson. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
And we're back. Good interview.
Solid.
I feel like we tried to open him up, and he didn't want to.
Hey, listen, Emerson, good people, great people, love what he's doing with the Ducks. The Ducks are fun, man. And I'm not just talking about
years.
I'm not talking about the on ice. I just, to me, that is a team that understands they need to do things differently in order to bring in younger fans and bring in anyone to their audience, and they're not afraid to take a swing. I respect organizations that aren't afraid to take a swing to connect with fans in different ways. And the Ducks are clearly doing that. I think it's fun.
I agree. So thanks for coming on. I thought you provided a lot of interesting insight in terms of like actual playoff preparation, of which he has some, which we don't really, you don't ever hear. I guess you kind of hear the anecdotes a lot of the time, like, you know, it's a different beast, but it's nice to hear like what the preparation for it is like. It's an interesting side of things. Let's get to 5-star questions. You can leave a 5-star question on our Patreon, patreon.com/bluesbreakaway today to get access to the Discord where you can leave the questions and we read them on the show, at least most of them. This first one is from Adam Furlong. What is your favorite away arena to see overrun with Rangers Blue? Similar question. When you think of MSG South, which arena comes to mind? Tampa Bay.
Panthers.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah. I don't think Tampa Bay. I think Panthers. Because nobody goes to those games unless the Rangers are there.
And people actually care about the Tampa Bay Lightning because they're good.
Right. Again, Devils fans would be like, well, I could just sell my Ranger tickets and it pays for my entire season ticket package.
Sure, but they're also not South, so.
Yeah, I know. I just can't relate to the feeling of if you think the Rangers are your biggest rival, and the Devils do think the Rangers are your biggest rival, you can't then tell me you can justify selling tickets to go see your team play against your biggest rival. I can't relate to that mindset.
Feels weird.
If I had Mets Phillies tickets or Mets Braves tickets, there is no circumstance where I would say, well, you know, if I sell these seats, I could probably recoup a lot of money and then I wouldn't. No, I'd want to be there to fucking yell at those people.
Be there.
Yeah. Yes.
I would sell every other game beforehand.
I would consider selling my Mets Yankees tickets because I don't consider the Yankees a rival. And I know I'd get a pretty penny for those seats. But if I was playing a team that I viscerally hated, there's no circumstance where I'm selling the ticket. I need to go there to be pissed off in person. That's like a trait that I have.
No one's surprised. These next two don't really make sense to me, but this is from Cole. This one's mainly for Ryan, but you have played Helldivers 2 yet? I have not. I've been stuck on Bellatro, addicted totally of the poker game. And then this one's for you, Greg. Trinity of Misery, why did you throw the milkshake?
Oh, so he listened to the bonus pod with Gina.
Oh.
It was Gina would say it's Met-related, and I am unable to refute that point. I was very drunk.
Okay.
I would say if Gina said it was Mets-related, I would just have to believe her.
I believe her. Don't provide any other contact. This is from Phil S. In 2009, when the Yankees won the World Series, A-Rod was finally able to become the clutch playoff performer after all those lackluster playoff performances. Do we need Mika or Panarin to become a 2009 playoff A-Rod, or is this more of a team effort?
I'm going to hold on. You answer this first, because I meant to pull up his baseball reference page before doing this.
Oh, the A-Rod postseason is ridiculous. It's absolutely insane. But on my side, look, Mika needs to show up in some capacity. He doesn't need to be Mika March hot. I mean, it would be nice if he scored 5 goals in, like, you know, 3 games. That would be awesome. But the player that really needs to show up in full force is Artemi Panarin. He's the guy. He's the star of this game, of this show. He's been lackluster the past couple playoffs. It's been pretty rough. So for him coming into this, he shaved his head for a reason. He got rid of the demons, as he said, and all these other things off his back. And he's having a career year. And there's no better time than now to play into that. So it's Panarin more than Mika, but you do need both. But the team, top to bottom, is as strong as we've seen it almost ever.
Here are the A-Rod numbers. 2005 and 2006, the Yankees lost in the ALDS both those years. And there's no excuse. A-Rod was atrocious. It reached its nadir in 2006 when he slashed .071, .133, .071. That's one hit and 14 at-bats, Ryan. And it was a single. So, but here's the other thing. If you want to go back to 2000, A-Rod against the Yankees in the ALCS had an OPS over 1,200. A-Rod as a Yankee in 2004, the ALDS against the Minnesota Twins, he had an OPS of over 1,200. In 2004, the Yankees against the Boston Red Sox, a series in which they choked and blew it, he had an OPS of about 900. Yes, he was otherworldly in 2009 when he had OPSs of 1,500. And 15-19 in the ALDS and ALCS. Yeah, but the problem with Yankee fans thinking A-Rod was bad in 2007, he had an OPS of 820. A-Rod was always good in the playoffs. You're all just fucking weird. Like, he had 2 bad series as a Yankee. Everything else before 2009, he was kind of Alex Rodriguez in very small 4-game sample sizes. So there's a lot about Alex Rodriguez that is justified. But there's a lot that is just created because Yankee fans were so precious and tender with Derek Jeter, and no one could be better than Derek Jeter and Derek Jeter and Derek Jeter and Derek Jeter. Here's the thing, guys. Yes. Best shortstop to ever play baseball in New York played third base for your fucking team because you guys had a goddamn complex about Derek Jeter. Grow the fuck up. You should have won more because you had A-Rod, not because of A-Rod. All right, I'm tired of this shit.
I just want to say to that person, I agree with the concept that you presented. You just presented an argument that Greg is passionate about.
Passionate about it. A-Rod was perfectly great as a Yankee. Grow up, retire his fucking number, losers.
He's quite good. This is from Roger. Let me preface. I don't know why I said preface. Well, you know why. It's me. let me preface by saying I hate the idea of playing 11-7. It's too many men on the ice, penalty just waiting to be happen. But with that being said, with Jones playing the way he has, what do you think about the idea of experimenting with it in game or a season or two this season? A third line is compromised of all players who can rotate on the shutdown line. It would provide security for when Lindgren inevitably has to leave the game for blood reasons. Well, this person called it, but I don't think 11-7 ever happens.
No, and it also doesn't work because you're throwing at least one defensive pairing into disarray a couple times every period, and then you're just forcing your forwards to play more, especially in a time of year where you should kind of be looking for ways to scale back your forwards' ice time. It just, to me, it doesn't work. Because I just don't know how you work the seventh defenseman in so naturally.
Seamlessly.
I don't know. I don't like it. And then, I know Peter Laviolette has loved double shifting Panarin when it matters, Trocheck when it matters, Lafreniere when it matters. But an entire game where someone has to skate with essentially with Goodrow and VC every time they take the ice, you're just asking too much of your forwards to me. Like, I understand the concept of you're trying to buy a forward a strict night off, but at the same time, you're buying that night off for that one forward at the expense of at least 6 other forwards. So you're not gaining any time by taking one guy out of the lineup to put a defenseman in. It just, I don't know. I'm a simple man. It's 12 and it's 6. And I don't know how you get the 12 and I don't know how you get the 6, but I need that to equal 18.
Breaking news for at the time of this recording of this podcast. So Vince Mercogliano says on Twitter.com, word on Ryan Lindgren is that he will be out for a few weeks, but the injury is not as bad as initially feared. He's expected to make a full recovery, but it is to be determined on what that means as far as playoff status.
Ooh, yep. And there's the recall as well. Brandon Scanlon is up.
Correct. So that's all fine. The to be determined of, on playoff status is really, you know, with injuries, whatever the injury is, it can go, it can get worse before it can get better. So there's a chance we still see him in the playoffs, but at least we know he's not ruled out for the playoffs. And your initial argument stands either way.
Yeah, I'm fine. Like, it, I will be fine. This is why you trade for Chad Ruedel. Go eat.
It's from Jets Rangers 1. Will the decision not to trade Zach Jones make losing Gus to free agency this offseason a lot easier
I'm not
to bear?
Fuck this. I'm not answering this question.
It's got four thumbs up. People want to talk about it.
I don't care. Who cares? Who cares? Stop asking me questions about the summer. Like, Jesus Christ. I don't fucking know what contract Capococco is going to get. I don't know what they're going to do with Ryan Lindgren. I don't know if they're going to trade X, Y, and Z. How about we just fucking get to the playoffs? Okay? How about we get to the playoffs, we see what they do in the playoffs, and then we see what Zach Jones is doing in 6 weeks. Let's have this conversation then. We're going to have so many fucking Mondays where we're going to have to talk about this hockey team when fucking nothing is going on. You want me to answer, does Zach Jones today make losing Erik Gustafsson potentially in 2 months fucking plausible? Fuck you! Just like watch a hockey game! Jesus Christ! The A-Rod question has now started something that I'm not going to be able to come back down
from.
You
just sound like Mike Francesa. So
well, it's right. It's fucking ridiculous. It's just like, oh, who do you think the Giants are taking in the first round of the draft? I don't fucking know. They haven't signed anybody. Like, Jesus. I'm begging you guys. They got like 15 games left this season.
14, yeah.
Watch the fucking games. Like, don't worry about what Zach Jones is going to have for lunch on a Thursday in June. Okay? Just enjoy the hockey he's playing now. Worry about roster construction when there's no hockey being played. I beg you. Fucking watch the game. Please. Jesus.
This question is from my cousin Vinny 16. I guess this is a reference to Vincent Trocheck being Rempe's lawyer, of course. It used to seem like Steve Yzerman was the best GM in the category of former NHL players. But after another shrewd deadline, do we think Drury has established himself as one of the best in the category of a top five overall GM?
I have
a couple feelings on this one.
Well, did he have a better deadline than Joe Sakic?
No.
So it's still Joe Sakic, essentially?
Yeah, and Drury's close with Sakic, of course.
Well, of course.
A couple of reasons.
Yep.
And look, I think over league-wide, when I talk to people throughout the year, I don't think other teams think Drury is shrewd. There's not a lot of people I talk to that think Drury is this overall great GM. Us as Ranger fans, and especially this podcast, we bow at the altar in a lot of different ways. I think there's been, other than that first week, which we talk about a lot, there's not been a lot of times where I've been very critical of Chris Drury. I think he's done an excellent job. But the perception league-wide is not that. It's not. And I don't know how long it takes to get there. Maybe it's like a tenure sort of thing. But we don't care because he does a great job and we think he does a great job.
Yeah, it's interesting because the one thing we do hear about Chris Drury is he's a stubborn son of a bitch. To a
and
point,
very friendly to both of those things constantly.
Yeah, him and Pat Verbeek seem to have the reputation of it's a staring contest and one of you is going to blink and it's not going to be me, which is what made the Frank Vatrano negotiation so interesting to watch from afar. But Steve Yzerman used to find value out of fucking nothing, right? That was his magic sauce, whether it was, originally Barclay Goodrow, originally Blake Coleman, his drafting, like Braden Point was a third round pick, Nikita Kucherov was after the first round. Yzerman had the reputation the Tampa Bay Rays do, where if they call about a specific player, you hang up the phone and you try to figure out why they like that specific player to begin with. Chris Drury, I don't get the sense that – I don't think he's uncovering diamonds in the rough. But what Chris Drury does well is he – again, outside of his first week on the job, he doesn't overpay. So if a guy is worth X, he's going to pay X. You will not get him to pay 1 cent more than he thinks a certain player – is worth. But like, I don't think Chris Drury saw something that other teams didn't see in Chad Ruedel. I don't think Chris Drury saw something in Jack Roslovic that other teams didn't see in him. I don't think Chris Drury saw other things in Nico Mikola or, you know, Vlad Tarasenko that other teams weren't seeing. Chris Drury is really good at paying what we feel is below market value, but what actually probably is just dead on balls accurate market value.
I agree with that. And one of the things I will say is, like, he's signed a lot of bottom pairing guys to insane contracts. Insane. Jimmy Vesey.
I know. The Vesey's. And again, the bad contracts he handed out, like Patrick Nemeth was getting that contract. The question is, was he getting it from the Rangers or was he getting it from someone else? And yes, hindsight being 2020, we'd rather he got it from somebody else. But I don't think Chris Drury gave Patrick Nemeth a contract that he wasn't getting. Same goes for Barclay Goodrow. Like, whether you like the contract or not, that was a contract that Barclay Goodrow was going to get. Nobody thought Barclay Goodrow was going to magically take less money than he did. So, you know, whether you want to give a guy like that 7 years, you and I are well on the record saying don't do it. But Barclay Goodrow got the contract he was going to get. He just got it from the Rangers.
It's from Inferno 272. I have a theory. The reason Rempe is so effective is because he's become such a sideshow and magnet for attention that it completely takes all the opposition attention, opening up time and space for his teammates, i.e. everyone is so busy wanting to kill him, they forgot about Mika Panarin. It's the same reason Sean Avery was so effective. Thoughts?
I disagree.
I think he's just huge, and I disagree as well, but I think he's absolutely just gigantic, and the fact that he actually hits you so hard is, I don't think, they know Panarin and Mika are there. They are well aware. They are game planned and prepped for them. What they're not prepped for is you can't teach 6'8 and getting hit by 6'8. And that is what has made him so effective. He moves his feet, he skates better, and he actually hits quite well. That's adding an edge to the fourth line. I don't think it makes anything crazier for Mika or Panarin at all.
No, and the Rangers essentially just went an entire week playing five teams with playoff aspirations. They went 4-1, and they essentially did it without Matt Rempe. Matt Rempe was not available for four of those games. He was only available for less than one period in the other game. So, no, I think it takes away from Matt, like, the good things Matt Rempe does when he's on the ice. He's been effective and good in his own right. The reason why Matt Rempe has been frustrating from a taking penalty standpoint is because when he's physically on the ice, he's been a positive for the Rangers. So I think it cheapens too much what Rempe does. And I think it also takes away from the players that are playing well.
It's from OnlyFan Dropout. I've been seeing a lot of talk about Truba's injury through the interwebs. Do you think this team's defensive pairings are legitimately better without Truba in the lineup? Or do you think it's just a product of Jones being very good for a couple games?
Jones being very good for a couple games.
Yeah, and I think Truba, my theory has been he's fighting through something. Truba at the beginning of the season was excellent. He was a different player. And same thing with him and Miller. There's he's a big reason the Rangers were first in the NHL. You can make the correlation causation situation as much as you want, but whether you feel Truba is the better player or not, he's coming back no matter what. So it's something that you have to live with. You can make the case, at least over the last couple games, but Truba is a playoff player. He's the guy you want in the playoffs. The hits and the physicality that the playoffs bring are totally different, and Truba is that guy. And I really feel that way.
Of the two defensemen that are currently injured for the New York Rangers, it's more important that Jacob Trouba is ready for night one of the playoffs than Ryan Lindgren.
I tend to agree with you. I know it feels hot to say, and I whatever, but that's the truth. This is from Nrod91. When did the narrative of Panarin not wanting to play with Kako come from, or rather where? I missed the part of this Kako lore, and I would love to know more about it. The original lore dump is from one of the final articles from great author Rick Carpinello. His book is now on sale, The Franchise. Get it wherever you get your books. And you can go back to his last article, and he kind of, like, in a couple lines talks about, like, and Panarin really doesn't want to play with Kako. I don't know the exact quote, but he mentioned it. And I've talked to people around, like, the Rangers for a while, and it's always, like, Kako got 10 games with Panarin and Ryan Strom. And at the time, Vince Bergogliano and us and everyone else were like, hey, I'm deeming this the top line. It's awesome. It's been great. And then it just never came back. Nothing ever, it just dissolved. And there's a couple, like, game log evidence as to why, but the only real official quote we ever have is from Rick mentioning it in an article.
Yeah.
Cool. It's from Izbox. Would you two consider diving into the game day channel? No, period. End of story. No.
I dive in every now and then when people need to be whipped into shape.
No, I'm good. I don't go to the game day channel. No. I know, Greg, you do sometimes some awesome game day stuff during the playoffs, and you do an awesome job with that. But game day channel, no thanks for me.
I'm just saying, like, you got to stop looking at them like lesser people, though, Ryan. You know, you
understand
they pay us money every month.
I get that. Yo, please, me? You're the guy you yell at so many of our supporters all the time.
I know. A lot of them do piss me off. It's crazy.
Me? Jeez, they're not lesser people. I just, the game threads anywhere, dude, are miserable. Reddit, if you go to any soccer game thread or any other game you're watching, go to the game thread. It is a disaster.
Well,
I can't do it.
I will say this. You and I are probably two online, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I tweet my thoughts during a Ranger game, but I'm not scrolling Twitter during a Ranger game. I've never understood wanting to journal your thoughts with other people as the game is going on. When the game itself is going on, if you're not in the room with me, I kind of pretend you don't exist.
I'm jealous that you can do that. I am hiding in the insider chat a lot of the time and posting my feelings constantly.
So, yeah, when the game itself is going on, I will tweet something I see during the game or celebrate something that happens during the game. For the most part, I like to watch the game, though.
That makes sense. I'm very jealous of you. This is from Toaster Daddy. The Islanders are currently tied for the second least amount of wins in the division, and yet they sit in the wildcard spot with 14 OT losses. What do you genuinely think it would take for them to actually change the point system, at least to a 3-1-0? They would have to be competent, Toaster Daddy, and I don't believe that'll be happening anytime soon.
Yeah, it's just not happening. I don't know. What else? What do I got to do to get people under the age of 60 to run for president? I don't fucking know, but I would like to.
This is from Mr. Bang Bang. Hey, Ryan, with the sad passing of ESPN Plus original ad break, can you please give it a beautiful eulogy as the thank you for good times? No, well, and I hope it rots in hell.
I can't believe you just completely glossed over the last comment I had here. What the fuck, man?
What'd I miss? I'm sorry.
I'm not saying it again. I don't want to get in trouble.
Are you serious? did I miss something I needed to edit out?
No. I just, you know, one of us cares about this country and the other one fucking hosts a podcast. That's all I'm saying.
Look, I'm 60-year-old president. I would love somebody younger. What do you want? I would love somebody that can actually, you know, can eat their food not mashed. Sounds good.
Wow. Now, hold on, though. Mashed potatoes are delightful.
Mashed potatoes are the best kind of potatoes.
Yeah. Or, wait. Would you consider a French fry a kind of potato?
No, French fries are in their own category, aren't they, at this point? It's kind of like Domino's isn't pizza. It's Domino's.
Oh, that is fucking true. I also don't know people that like Domino's. I mean, I know like people. Domino's. I don't get why they like pizza. Domino's.
There are times where it calls for Domino's.
I don't understand that.
If you're with a large group of degenerates and you need food fast and you're not in New York, Domino's is the answer.
I disagree.
Chinese? What's your go-to?
No, well, I think we're of an age now where we just don't do big fucking group orders anymore.
Get I know, but food. At the time, it was the thing to do.
At the time, it was $6. That's why we ate Domino's. We ate Domino's because we were poor.
Yeah, that's part of it. Yeah,
part of it. That's all of it.
It was good though when I was drinking.
Yeah,
it was quite the time.
Well, yes, because you were drinking $1.95 beers. You were drinking the leftover piss of Bud Light that is called Natty. And you were eating Domino's. We were disgusting humans, Ryan. And the world was a better place.
It's very true. This is from Adam Furlong. At the end of one in Pittsburgh, Panarin has scored 37 goals in the season in his 67th game of the season. What are the odds you would put him on reaching 50 goals? Would need 13 goals in 15 games. Low? Low.
Yeah, I'd say no higher than 30%. It's not impossible. 13 goals in 16 games for Artemi Panarin is not asking for the world, but he'd have to get hot.
That's from Siege. How would you rank the potential playoff matchups of, well, we've talked about this, Tampa, Detroit, Philly, New York, Washington. Look, I want to play Philly or Washington. That'd be awesome. But I really don't want to play Tampa. The answer is I don't want to play Tampa. I'll play anybody else.
Yeah, we talked about this.
That's from Blind Zebra, working for work. Let's face it. Let's face it, guys. Is there any way to the Rangers re-sign Lindy?
Off season,
my friend. This is from
I'm
Dylan.
Not as angry as I was like 10 minutes ago, but it just fucking please just like try to live in the moment and just enjoy fucking hockey. Please.
This is from Ish22. Assuming the Rangers are both down Lindgren and Trouba for the foreseeable future, what are the most logical defensive pairs? We kind of talked about this.
Yeah, we hit on this one too.
Dylan, you were hosting a party. You were ordered 4 large pizzas. What are your go-to 4 orders?
Cheese, and pepperoni.
Cheese, pepperoni. I love like a peppers and onions, and I think a meatball pizza is quite good.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Everybody likes to try to get fucking exotic.
For a party, you need 2 cheese minimum.
Yeah, you just it's less about trying to impress people and catering to your one fucking vegan friend, and more, if I'm in a room with 30 people, what are the orders that I can likely get devoured if
vegetarian
I order?
Friend, because vegan's not going to fly for pizza unless we do vegetarian.
I don't know, whatever. They're the same fucking thing.
Okay.
What? I'm sorry. One doesn't like cheese either because it's from the fucking milk of a mother.
That's how a vegan works, yeah.
Yeah, how are they alive, by the way?
Yeah, I have no idea. This question's from Maddie Jack. Sorry, vegans out there. Don't be angry at me. Please keep supporting us. This is from Maddie Jack. Question for Greg. This one is, I think, specifically made to piss you off.
Yeah, so yeah. No, I have an answer ready for it.
Okay, question for Greg. Would you be happy if the Mets won a World Series if you knew that Chase Utley was directly responsible for making it happen? It's tied to the championship conversation anytime that's brought up, so it's Chase Utley's greatness.
Yeah. Would you like to know the Kelly Blue Book value of a 2024 black four-door SUV?
Go listen to our OT if you want to get
that. Yeah, here's what I can get today, and here's what I can get if I continue the bit. You know what I mean?
This is from Vera Francis. I know we all talked about what we want Anwar to do, but what do we... Oh, God, sorry. I was making sure this wasn't about the offseason. I got really excited. But what we want Anwar to do, but what do we think actually eventually will give the players a night off before the playoffs, especially with this gauntlet of a schedule to finish the season? I think maybe a game or two beforehand, maybe depending on if they're playing for the actual one seed or two seed or not.
Yeah, they're going to do the thing where, you know, some guys, once they clinch a playoff spot, and they feel comfortable that this is why it doesn't really work. Because here's the thing. It's going to come down to the final 4 games of the season between the Rangers and the Hurricanes. So as long as the Rangers have a chance to win the division and they're trying to hold off the Hurricanes, the Rangers aren't going to take anybody out of their lineup, even if they should. So what it would take the Rangers clinching a one seed well before the final week, 2 weeks of the season, which isn't going to happen. So this is why you don't wait to do this time of year. You've been doing it all year. This is why you don't just hope that you find some meaningless games on your schedule come April and late March. This is why when you're playing the fucking St. Louis Blues at home on a Saturday after you haven't played for a week, I don't know, maybe someone just has a cold and they don't play in that game. And you give them an extra day just so that they are ready to go for a later game. You have to save the miles elsewhere. It's just the same people who say a game in November is just as important as a game in April. It's the same logic applies, except if you rest a guy in November, you know, it just feels less important than resting a guy in April, but you're still saving the same amount of miles. I don't know. It's never going to happen in hockey. Like it just isn't. I did appreciate Vince for caving this past week and acknowledging that it makes sense for the Rangers to strategically start taking guys out of their lineup that they can buy a night off. Like, I'm happy that he's playing well. But was it necessary for Mika to immediately go back in the lineup after taking a puck to the face? You couldn't give him the Penguins game off? You couldn't let him rest for 24 hours? Like, if you're gonna keep having Mika play with a fucking bubble, you're just never gonna do this. So I get that I'm right. I get that I will never be proven right, though.
I think you're right. So talk to Seamus. Did Greg orchestrate the Roslovic trade, or did a team start listening because they didn't get Vetrano? They got the next Vetrano for 1/4 the price. You know, it's Greg, you've done a great job with this, of course, obviously, but we talked about a lot over the last couple of weeks. The Rangers went out and tried to get a bunch of different people. I think today Friedman was talking about on 32 Thoughts that the Rangers tried to get Max Pacioretty, which was something that you and I heard exclusively as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he tried to shop around for the best deal possible for the least price. It was a buyer's market in a big, big way. I don't think he was going to pay up for a guy like Vetrano, no matter what.
I also got a lot of questions about Pacioretty not wanting to leave Washington.
But I thought that was weird as well.
That's fair enough. Hey, listen, we might be proven wrong because they're fucking red hot right now.
And yeah, good for them.
I get it. He's moved around a bunch the last couple of years, and he's probably really comfortable. And he's probably, frankly, thinking about where he wants to live when he's not playing hockey more than where he's living where he is playing hockey. So, you know, you turn 35, all of a sudden you have different ideas and dynamics, and you and I are going through that this year, which is fucking great. But, yeah, I mean, I would have liked Pacioretty, but I'm happy. Again, this our whole point about Vetrano is it's not that Roslovic is doing something better or different than Vetrano. It's more that Roslovic is doing what we expected someone like Vetrano to do. And if you can get that for a fourth-round pick instead of a first-round pick, that's usually better business.
That's the show. So we'll be back with BSBOT later this week, Thursday night, after the Bruins game. And if you want to say hello to me this weekend, I will be in New York City for March Madness and also watching the Rangers game at T-Squared. I don't even know who's going to show up. We'll see. But it should be fun. I know I talked about it in the open as well. Greg, anything to plug before we get out of here? That's it.
It's a big musical week. Big musical week, Ryan.
Unbelievable.
I think we're doing 5 this week.
I can't.
In 4 days. I have a doubleheader on Saturday.
You're fucking Ranger scheduling yourself on High School Musicals.
I have a Boston Spa doing Beauty and the Beast on Thursday. We're making the trip to Whitehall for Mamma Mia on Friday. We're doing a Scotia Glenville version of Rent, followed by Voorheesville doing Chicago on Saturday. And then we end it with Legally Blonde. I don't fucking know where. I will say Cahos, but I think that's wrong. On Sunday.
One of the craziest things I've ever heard, but have a great time.
Yeah, I'm not watching basketball on Saturday. I'm not really even doing a bracket this year, man. I don't know. The dynamic of how I've fallen out of love with college basketball is something I have a really hard time with squaring.
Do you want to do 3 minutes on this? Because I don't know if you listened to Simmons. I don't know if it was Simmons the other day.
Simmons straight up mentioned he wasn't talking about it because he doesn't care.
It's become like junior NBA. Like, I don't.
No, but I think it's worse because when it, you know, March Madness used to be an obsession of mine. I would say after the Mets, my second favorite thing would be college basketball. You know, I grew up in Connecticut during the prime of the Jim Calhoun years. We didn't have a professional sports team because the Carolina Hurricanes are fucking scoundrels. So we had UConn Huskies basketball, both men's and women's. I should make mention because the Gino Auriemma years with like Diana, I mean, he's still going, but Diana Taurasi, Sue Bird, Maya Moore, all those great UConn teams I also grew up with, and it was wonderful. But yeah, I really don't know what it is because I still care about UConn. I still want UConn to do well, but I know less about college basketball now than I've ever known in my entire life. Like, I watched the selection show yesterday, and I like didn't know what at-large teams I should be even worried about not making the tournament. And that's an experience I've never really had. I probably can't name you 10 players in college basketball. I don't want to say it's because these guys change teams all the time, because like the transfer rules for college football have been great. With the exception of some of the quarterbacks and where the fuck they go and how long they fucking play. If anybody takes Bo Nix, Ryan, we're going to have a whole new rant come our way, come May, but that we'll get there when we get there. It's just strange. The transfer rules for college football have made college football better. It's made the games more interesting. It's made it's spread the talent more accurately and necessarily, because now you don't need guys sitting on the bench of Alabama for 3 years. They can go somewhere else and play immediately and play well and make a name for themselves. And that's wonderful. But the transfer rules with college basketball, I just can't keep up. Like I just think,
isn't it also though, not to cut you off here, man, but isn't it like college football has kind of killed college basketball because of all the realignment, and that's the main reason for realignment?
A little bit, but I mean, the college basketball landscape changed once the original Big East died, and it's never truly recovered from that. I I truly think Simmons talks about this a lot, yep. and I think he's right. I think AAU culture has killed college basketball because I truly believe the real problem with college basketball, it's not that these players are more anonymous. It's that these players aren't very good. I really do think that's what it boils down to, where, you know, the best players the last couple of years, the players that are making the biggest impact in the NBA, they're all international. And it's because the international game is structured differently and these kids are brought up differently. Like if Wembanyama was in the AAU program, he would have gotten fucking smoked. He'd be burnt out by now. And it's I just think the talent, college basketball has never been as good as the NBA. I don't care. Anyone who's ever tried to make that point, you're nuts. We're talking about kids that can't shoot like 40% from the field. That's always been true. But now it's just like, I just don't think there are really good college basketball players. And you can't be a star in college basketball like you could. You don't even have to go that far back. Like, people had hard opinions about guys like Jahlil Okafor like 8 years ago. But this year, I UConn's the best team in the nation, and I think one guy has a national profile.
Yeah, I can't name. I used to be able to name all these guys all the time. I know I'm older, but I'm just as online as I ever was. I have no idea.
I think another part of it is it's coached more anonymously too. Like outside of Tom Izzo and I guess the corpse of Rick Pitino, who's holding out, like there's no Coach K, there's no Roy Williams. Everybody that was great when we like Bill Self, the Kansas teams just aren't as good as they used to be. You know, there's no Jim Calhoun.
Yep.
The coaching stars, the college basketball isn't making coaching stars anymore. Like I don't know, man. It's weird. I still love the Thursday and the Friday of March Madness, but I'll be honest, I think after Friday, I will not watch a lot of college basketball unless my bracket is doing something that I am not expecting it to do. I have so many less opinions about college basketball, which if you told me this 10 years ago, I would have thought you were crazy.
The only reason I'll be watching the game is because I might be at the bar early and I'll be watching, waiting for the Ranger game. That's as far as
I go. Listen, nothing beats that Thursday and Friday. There's nonstop basketball from noon to 1 a.m. Like, that's great. This is also a big reason why I like the NFL is because it's 7 hours of commercial-free football. Like, if you just put sports on a TV for that long, I'm going to have a good time. But yeah, after these first 2 days, man, and I don't know how to fix it. I really don't, because I don't know how you make the kids better. And Simmons talks about this a lot. Russillo talks about this a lot. But if you're losing Bill Simmons, like, you're fucked, man. That's supposed to be the guy you never lose.
I would love to talk about this in the future. Not that I'm involved in it at all, but like, everything I've heard about youth sports, you know, I have a cousin, or my wife's cousin is like involved in, you know, youth soccer and everything. Dude, it's insane. It's fucking crazy what they do. They play like 5 games in a weekend. Like, what are we doing? It's crazy.
Yeah. All right, I don't know, man. It's a damn shame is what it is. I get it. We're old. We're always nostalgic on what we had as a kid. Mm-hmm. We loved growing up, all that fun stuff. Being able to turn March Madness on the TVs in school when I was in high school.
Thursday, Friday was.
Learning stopped at noon, and the male teachers knew. Like, they gave up. Some of the female teachers also gave up because the boys stopped coming to class. But male teachers were like, please come to class. I will turn the game on the TV if you just, like, at least look at the problem on the board.
Yeah, let's pretend we're doing math, and then we'll watch the shots.
But I mean, it's tough. Like, you and I, we were in high school for the Steph Curry years. We were in college for the Jimmer Fredette years. Like, we're nostalgic about a college basketball that doesn't exist anymore because those guys don't. There is no Jimmer anymore in college basketball. Like, even Duke. You know, I can't remember the last time I hated a white guy on Duke. That's fucking mind-blowing.
Been a while. Yeah.
It's been a long time. The last white guy I hated on Duke, I think, coaches the team.
That's unbelievable.
What the fuck?
All right, man. That ends here. So you can follow me on Twitter at OrionMeat. You can follow Greg at Blue Shirts Break. We'll be back later this week with BSBOT. Otherwise, we'll see you guys next week. I love you guys. Bye. Okay, so it's the end of the show. If you're not new to the show, and this isn't your first episode, at the end of every episode, for the main show at least, I
thank all our NHL Insider Club members. And I will still continue to do so. But I've been thinking about some way to mix this up. It's been a long time. I said this a couple weeks ago that I didn't expect more than like 5 to 10 people to join this thing. And we're at 106. So that's a lot more. And while it's fun to have me misread names every single week, I thought, what do the Rangers do that we don't do? And after every single game, and I've seen people do this, they're tracking, you know, who gets the Broadway hat. I think Barclay Goodrow still hasn't gotten this season, according to one of our guests, Hope, on Twitter. And I thought it would be fun to maybe have the Insiders Club be part of a random drawing at the end of every episode. And we kind of keep track who's the leader, and I'll have a spreadsheet and all that. So I guess I'll pick the name first. This is the first ever drawing. But maybe I'll read it as I go. So I've generated the number. I don't know who it is. I've just clicked it. We have a winner, and I have them in order. So I will say the name when we go. Adam Cohen, Adam Cartullo, Adam Keach, Alex Flynn, Alex Gartner, Amber Cohensberger, Andrew Rauner, Anthony Gray, Anthony McCall, Anthony Monturo, Anthony Tenegretta, April Erickson, Ari Zenger, Bill Waters, Bill Weber, Bill Allison, Bill Rattel, Bowen Greenleaf, Brandon Lackos, Brandon Magnum, Greg Granger, Brian Doyle, Brian Doherty, Brian Gallagher, Brian Mallon, Brian Sotovia. Why is that so hard for me? Brian Farrell, Cassie Romancise, Chris Finelli, Chris Haru, CJ Stellwagen, Connor Pudemich, Daniel Delaney, Daniel DeZend, David Naradin, and congratulations to Dennis Deitz, who is our first ever NHL Insider Club member winner of the week. You're the winner. David Siegel. I don't know what that means. But I'm going to note that down. Maybe one day we'll figure something out for this. But you're the first one ever. Congratulations to David Siegel. DJ Banana Jazz, Dr. Kruger, Dylan Bretschneider. Maybe we'll do this a different way next week. This is like we're workshopping it, guys. We're workshopping it together. It's eventually going to be funner and better, I think. Or we'll scrap the idea altogether. Dr. Kruger, Dylan Bretschneider, Eric Stagg, Gabe Valley, Gary Reyes, Give Gardner a Cup, Greg, Gretzky, McFly, Harrison Haskell, Hello Vanilla, Hip89, Ian Usher, Jack Bagley, Jack Grogan, Jake Keith, James Masker, Jerry and Marquez, Jason Stumer, Jason Zabrowski, Joanna, John Hardesty, Johnny Shea, Johnny Thundercock, Jordan, Josh Kestenbaum, Joseph Sirko, Josh White, Christian Florida, Carl Schweinguin, oh, Ryan, yeah, Cried or Die, Lee Plummer, Leszek Granowski, Leo Giordano, Matthew Goodwin, Matthew Kai, Meatball the Cack, Michael Koenig, Mike Bucklaw, Mike Mancuzu, Mike Pasternak, Nate Hanafy, Neeks, Neil Grover, Palms for Prez, Nicholas DiNicola, Other Slash, Pascal Perrier, Paul J. Smith, Pavel Kodrev, messed that up, Phoenix Ignition, PJ Sisparo, Randy Tesser, Ryan Sieve, Ryan Watch Miracle, Swinegart, The Drop BK, Tommy Sicari, Tommy Tedeschi, Tommy O'Neill, Tony Gregory, Tori from Manhattan, Vinny Bracco, Will Hay, Will Spector, Will Spector, and Winston the Golden Retriever. For the first time ever, I read it off an Excel spreadsheet. Didn't go as well as when I read off Patreon. I'm gonna do that from now on. So look, super fun idea. I don't know, it might be fun. I say super fun and then I'm going, is it actually fun? But we'll stick to it. So congratulations again to our winner this week. That was David Siegel, I believe. Yep, David Siegel. Or was it Dennis Deitz? Oh, no. I forgot who it was. That's upsetting. I'm not re-recording this. You know what? For the first week ever, we're doing a double winner. That's right. Dennis Deitz and David Siegel, you are both the winner. It's the first one. We can do doubles. We can do doubles. Doubles is fine. Doubles is safe. Triples is safe. And I'll note that down. We've got two winners for the week one. And we'll see if anybody's ever a double winner. Maybe like at three, we'll give away a prize. I think that's fair. Three seems insane. Like if you win three, it's once a week of the drawing. We only do 52 of these a year. If you're a three, we'll get you something special, right? That makes sense. We'll chat in the inside chat what that should be. But three, huge winner. No idea what that means. All right. See you guys soon. Love you guys. Bye.